Before we get to this episode of The Wiggle Room, I want to take a moment and thank a sponsor. And those are our friends over at Rothy's. And here to talk with me about Rothy's right off of the 2500th Robin's Podcast episode, where she delivered a wonderful interview of yours truly. Here is the first lady of podcasting, Nicole Sisternino. Nicole, how are you?
I'm happy to be back in my seat.
Everybody knows you are a shoe expert, but let's talk about Rothy's, which are made from recycled water bottles.
Yes, I was just talking to a group of mom friends about this.
Yes, okay, what were you saying?
I was saying how I normally only wear heels, but I now own a pair of Rothy's shoes, and I like them.
Rothy's is making flats from recycled water bottles. You can ditch the heels and get your hands on Rothy's, the everyday flat for life on the go. Stylish, classic, comfortable. They come in fashionable styles, the flat, the point, the loafer, for women's and girls, and they recently launched the sneaker.
I want to try the sneaker. I have the point, but I want to try the sneaker. They look really cute.
Yeah. It's going to blow your mind. They made from recycled water bottles because they're the softest shoes you put on your feet. You can feel good about wearing them. And of course, machine washable too.
They don't crunch like water bottles.
No, they don't crunch like a water bottle.
I was a little nervous.
Nicole loves her Rothy's and you will too. Right now, Rothy's has an amazing deal for our listeners. Use the promo code ROB for free shipping and free returns or exchanges on your Rothy's shoe. Trust me, you won't want to return them. Go to Rothy's.com. That's Rothy's. Enter the promo code ROB to get your cute shoes and free shipping. It's a no-brainer. Shoes that are comfortable, stylish, and sustainable, and free shipping. Go get yourself a pair today. Rothy's.com, promo code ROB. Get this deal while it lasts. Nicole, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You want to stick around for the wand off?
No, it's a hard no.
Check it out.
Josh. Wiggle, 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 wiggle. Lur. Wiggle, 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 wiggle. Lur. Wiggle, 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 wiggle. Lur. Wiggle, 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 wiggle. Lur. Do the wiggle, man.
I do the wiggle, man. Yeah. Happy Wandica.
Oh, happy Wandica to you as well, Rob. I can't believe it. The 2501st Rob Has a Podcast episode. Here we are.
2501.
What a milestone. Yeah. 2501. Almost Jean Valjean's number.
Almost.
Not quite.
Almost. Josh Wiggler, how are you?
I am fantastic. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm so excited to dig into this this 2-hour episode of Survivor that we have to talk about. I'll tell you what, Rob, I'm not getting off of this podcast until you do. I'm going to be the last one standing on this podcast.
I'm going to win.
I need this podcast more than you do.
I know.
It's definitely
but
true.
I can't get down.
Yeah, you're too deep in that for you to walk away from the wiggle room at this point. It would just be bad optics. So you're stuck with me.
No. And really, every episode of The Wiggle Room is like a long, boring, meandering conversation that puts a lot of people into like great pain by the end. So it is very similar to that challenge performance from Christian.
I thought you were about to make a Dear Scooter reference. I thought you were about to make a Sleep With Me plug. Instead, it is I who is making the plug for Sleep With Me.
Yes, you are. That Dear Scooter is doing great. He almost doesn't need our plugs.
He is fantastic. He's the best.
Okay. All right. Josh Wiggler. So we are so close to the ending of the season now. Here we are in December, and now the calendar has changed over to the final Survivor month of 2018. Actually, the final month of everything in 2018, if we're going to be really specific about it.
You were just going to say the final month of everything. Period.
No, not to my knowledge, but so the Survivor calendar, we are TikTok 2.5 weeks away from the Survivor finale. You have famously said an incredible season. How are you feeling on the precipice of the home stretch?
Samesies. I'm feeling exactly the same. I don't think that, did we just watch the two best hours of Survivor David versus Goliath? I don't think so. But did we watch a really compelling 2 hours of Survivor? Absolutely. And that 2 hours contained what you have said is conservatively a top 10 immunity challenge here. I think it's really high up there. The Christian and Alec battle is just so excellent, both in terms of like the story of what actually happened out there, of just the head-to-head battle that goes almost 6 hours, but also the way that it's presented, the editing, again, once again, just the storytelling on that was so fantastic. And I don't know, I really do think that maybe this is the one, Rob. This is the favor to call in. Like, you know, if I have any pull whatsoever with the Survivor gods, with the powers that be, maybe this is the time to call it in to get them to release the full 6 hours of that immunity challenge. I feel like that might be the one to pull the trigger on. I think I would. And I think I would treasure it forever. I think we all would.
Okay. All right, Josh, we have so much to talk about coming out of the double episode. I guess real quick, let's talk about the two people that we lost this week. Alec in the first hour. Any final thoughts on Alec?
Nah, man, snuff it, bro. I'm done talking about Alec. No, I'm never done talking about Alec. Alec is fantastic. I think the expectations on Mr. Merlino were pretty low, going into this season for all sorts of reasons. And I think that he really delivered. I think he was a real surprise this season. Not a huge surprise, I guess, to see him go where he goes, especially within the context of the episode. But I was very pleasantly surprised with how he came across on the show. I think that he walks away from this season as a bit of a fan favorite. I think not the fan favorite of the season, but I think he's like in that upper echelon of Survivor players from David versus Goliath. Do you think that's fair? I think that's fair.
Oh my God, bro.
Okay. In the upper echelon of the fan favorites for this season.
I'm not talking about you necessarily, but I think when you look at the people who are walking away, I think he's certainly top half. Yeah, I think he's potentially top five, baby.
Top five, baby.
I think it's potential.
I've learned that this is dicey territory to try to, you know, prognosticate what the fan base as a whole is feeling. People, because you are sure to hear from people, well, I don't feel that way.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. I'm tired. It's late in the day.
Don't tell people how they feel. That's a lesson I've learned in podcasting.
You're right. I'm sorry. I take it all back.
What about Carl? What about Carl, a.k.a. Godfather Carl on Twitter?
Yeah, oh my God, the Twitter handle change is fantastic. And I love that like Carl didn't realize that he was being referred to as the Godfather out there. And I just love the idea of him watching that back on the night that this episode is airing, knowing that it's going to end in his demise and finding that out for the first time and just being like, man, that's awesome. They thought I was the Godfather. He loved it.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, I think a really good sport about the whole thing that like he like didn't realize what he was walking into on Wednesday night was the Godfather Part 1, Part 2. And it was hysterical. It was really, really fun to see.
That was the name of the 2-part episode?
That's what it should have been called for sure. I think it was called Tribal Lines Are Blurred, which is a Davey shout out, which is, you know, Davey had a great night as well. But I don't think anyone had as memorable a night as Carl did.
Okay. All right, Josh, you have been conducting interviews with a lot of the players so far during the season for your outstanding Survivor coverage on THR. That's short for The Hollywood Reporter.
Not a Hollywood Reporter.
Right, no, it's not AHR.
Right.
And Josh, you spoke this week to Gabby after her big move this week.
I was very happy to get Gabby, who is obviously a professional writer by trade, and I think it shows in both the copious amounts of answers that we received from Gabby. I think the longest of these by a good stretch or close, some material on the editing room floor, I must confess. But really, really fantastic content, I thought, for Gabby to explain, one of her, I think, would you say this is like her first, move that she drove this season is this vote against Carl?
Well, I think it really depends on how you look at the move to vote out Jessica early on in the season. You know, Gabby is the one who has a conversation with B and Jessica and ends up walking away from that and ending up, talking with Elizabeth, who also wants to figure out a way to save Lyrsa. And then right. She's the one who brings in Christian and Nick. And I do think that similarly, in this same vote of five people, the same number of votes that it took to get rid of Jessica early on, it's a similar thing where she goes to Christian and then Christian is able to, you know, go get the mic or the rock star, fellow rock star in Nick in the Jessica vote. So, you know, there's then two other women that are also voting with them that it looks like that Gabby may have be the glue to like hold that alliance of five together. So it is in some ways similar to that Jessica vote.
I thought it was awesome, yeah, to see this kind of like ragtag crew come together once again to blindside Carl, except this time literally Carl, you know, with the intention of knocking him out of the game. It was a really, really fun vote, and talking to Gabby about it was great as well. The article, if you haven't read it yet, thr.com/survivor. It's also my pinned tweet at Round Howard, and she goes into really extensive detail about exactly what went down. One of the more compelling facts I thought was that this was a move they wanted to pull off around the time of the Alec vote, but they ultimately felt like if they knock out Carl instead of Alec in that moment, then it looks more like an emotional decision rather than a strategic decision. Alec looks like he has all the credit, because what a stupid thing to keep Alec around in that spot when it's such an obvious thing to get rid of Alec. So go down the line, vote out Alec, and hope that you can pull this plan off again in 3 days' time. And that's what they end up doing. So in Gabby and Christian's world, it would seem Carl was in their sights for a solid 6 days, which I think that's a long time to, you know, sit on your hands when you have like your sights set on one person to go after.
In addition to the strategy, you also got a chance to talk to Gabby about the perception of her of being a person who is overly emotional in the season. What was her response to all that?
She gave a great response to that, I thought. Yeah, I asked her, of course, you know, you can't have Gabby on here without talking about the thing that so many people have been talking about. We stan a crying queen and all of that. Some people do not stan a crying queen. And certainly we have seen those perspectives as well in the Survivor online space. And I wanted to give Gabby a chance to address that. And I thought that she gave a really good answer to all of that, which I'll read if you'll allow me. I'll go ahead and read the full Gabby novella in response to the question. Gabby writes, "First of all, let me say I did not cry in episodes 3, 5, 8, 9, or 11. And yes, I think I deserve a gold medal for that. In all seriousness, I want to debunk the notion that my tears are fake. As flattered as I am by all the fans who think that I have such magnificent acting chops, I assure you that I did high school theater and am not a great actor. And also, I believe being able to cry that convincingly on demand would actually make me a psychopath." quick sidebar to say, like, a lot of actors can cry on demand. It's part of their skill, and I don't know if that makes them psychopaths. Psychos. Anyway, continuing. Instead, I want to propose another way to frame my tears. They can be both genuine and strategic. I knew going into the game that I'm a person who cries easily when I'm sad, angry, or even happy. I even joked about it in my preseason self-comparison to Dawn and in my interview with you for First One Out. You being me. I think in Survivor...
You being me?
I'm saying I'm the you. Okay. I think in Survivor, you have to figure out how to work with your own natural personality quirks. So if I know I'm going to cry because I can't control my body's natural reaction, what can I do? I can use it as a way to connect with people. Vulnerability is a powerful bonding mechanism. Would Christian have wanted to protect me on Teva had I not been vulnerable with him in telling him I'm worried about my place on the tribe? He could have easily thrown me under the bus to the Goliaths if I was just a number to him, and we didn't have that human connection. Additionally, pathos is a powerful rhetorical device. Would Allison have considered flipping on Dan had I not said, I'm scared and I need you to help me? That emotional plea was purposeful. I knew Allison was an extremely empathetic person and would feel bonded to me if I opened up, which was confirmed in her confessional where she said as a doctor she feels the need to protect people. Sometimes the tears don't serve a real purpose, and I just have to remind the fans that I'm human. When I cried at the Elizabeth Tribal, people speculated I was some kind of mastermind with crocodile tears since I knew she was going home. Sorry to disappoint, but those tears were born out of real frustration. Those tears weren't fake or me trying to cover up the strike force. It was a real human moment wanting to defend someone that I cared about. You can love or hate me for it, but I think people in my life appreciate that I'm an empathetic friend who will always stand up for them. Let me also clarify that I never cried or complained about the elements, how the game was too hard, or whatever ridiculous thing I've seen people claim I am quote-unquote whining about. I love Survivor, would never quit, found the rain exhilarating though challenging, and for people to say that I am mentally weak is flat out wrong. Lastly, I want to ask the people who are so incensed by my crying why it bothers them so much. If you've been told in your life that it's weak to cry, I have compassion for you and hope you can find a healthy way to express your emotions that works for you. Emotions are powerful and wonderful and make us human. I hope that people who have walls up can someday find the strength to be vulnerable, as I think you'll find it brings love, joy, and deep relationships into your life. And okay. Scene.
All right. So for Gabby, emotions are like a superpower.
Yes. Yes, I saw somebody on Twitter, I think it was on Twitter, maybe it was on Facebook, who made the comment that if empathy is Kellen Bechtold's superpower, then vulnerability is Gabby's superpower.
Yes.
Like that. I think that's great. I think that's a really fun comparison.
And she's almost like an X person. In terms of, is that the right
nomenclature? Marvel, like a Marvel X-Men character?
Yes.
A
yes.
Mutant?
Yes.
Saying Gabby's a mutant?
Well, no, you said that, not me.
Well, that's what you're saying. If you're saying she's like an X-Men character, they are technically mutants. So, you know, that's their classification.
Because
Homo superior. Okay.
So what I want to compare is Gabby's tears to Wolverine's claws. Does it hurt when they come out?
Every time.
Yes. But
wow.
That he would use them for good purpose.
Wow. Gabby is the Wolverine of Survivor David versus Goliath. Don't at me and we can call the podcast.
Right.
There.
Because in these X-Men movies, like, you know, these characters that they have powers and they can't necessarily control them. But and they sometimes they come out when they don't want them to. But they say, well, how can I use this superpower to accomplish what I'm trying to do for good?
Does that mean if they ever meet that Gabby and Jessica Lewis won't get along because Gabby is Wolverine and Jessica Lewis is Cyclops with the burning red eyes?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that.
We'll have to find out.
I don't know about that. But no, I think that's interesting of that. And you know, and I had been said at one point that I felt like that Gabby might have been faking at one of those tribal counts. I did not mean it as to be insulting. I hope that no offense was taken.
Sure.
That I thought. But I was like, hey, she's in on this plan on the strike force. And the plan was, hey, let's vote out a David. And I said, OK, well, she's just going along with the plan that we saw on the TV show.
No, I totally get that. And I think that, you know, we live in a time right now where weakness, perceived weakness, where like vulnerability is like a bad word, or, you know, people are, you know, you have to be strong. You have to be resilient in the face of anything. And to show any sign of vulnerability is to show that you are a weak person. And I think it's ridiculous. I know it's ridiculous. And it's exciting to see somebody on television who's wielding that in a way that they are not ashamed of and not embarrassed by and feel empowered by even. And I thought that the way that she talked that through, I thought was really cool. You know, I'm sure Wolverine's been known to cry. There's a great GIF or a meme rather of the Wolverine from the 1990s animated X-Men series crying over a picture. I believe it's a picture of Morph, though perhaps it's a picture of Jean Grey, and he's lying in his bed and he's really upset about it. So that's the iconic Wolverine crying. And in the movies, Hugh Jackman cries a few times.
Sure.
So, you know, it all adds up.
Okay. Let's talk about the other person who ended up flipping from the Davids to end up voting out Carl. And that was Christian. And that so much podcasting over the weekend. I spoke with James Lynn on Friday night. I spoke with Rourke on Saturday. And I really felt like after watching the episode a third or fourth time, I really ended up feeling like I really did like this move for Gabby. And I didn't like it for Christian on Wednesday night. And I and I really didn't like it by the time I had watched the episode a few more times. And I understand some people, you know, got this conclusion on watching the episode once. So I'm not saying I'm better than anybody.
Sure, of course. I
do have a different interpretation when I watch it a couple times.
Well, I mean, I was listening to, you know, I just hadn't really thought about it much yet when by the time I was listening to the Know-It-Alls. I've really, like, my first reaction to Survivor this season has been just how entertained I am, as opposed to, like, really doing, like, the immediate deep dive strategic analysis. It's just been, like, how much fun this has been, or how emotional it's been, or, you know, any of the other things that this season is eliciting in people. And so by the time I'm listening to you and Steven talk it through on the strategic level, it's really the first time that I'm allowing myself to start considering that in greater detail. And as you guys were talking through this from Christian's perspective, it got me thinking about, like, what Christian had done here and why it felt like it felt very familiar. It felt very, very familiar to me, as if it was something that, like, Christian had like kind of called his shot on while talking with me out on location. And I'm very happy that I have the receipts from all of these preseason interviews that I've done. And the way that I map that out is, like, I'll go back, I'll listen to all of the interviews before we start, you know, before Taryn and I start putting first one out together. I, like, time code everything by topic within the interview. And I was looking through, like, the time coded interview with Christian and found something that looked pretty solidly like he was describing what he was going to eventually do with this Carl vote. So I've pulled the clip. We're gonna go back into preseason material. I don't believe this ended up in first one out. So I think that this is the first time that this is seeing the light of day. But towards the end of my interview with Christian and my the end of my interviews with everybody, I'll ask them that first one out question of what happens if you've gone through all of this to be knocked out first. And then I'll ask them the cousin of that question of why are you going to be the winner? Why are you not even concerned about being the first one out? And so this clip is in response to why Christian is going to win this season. And I think he says something that's at least instructive of where his mind might be at when he's making this move to vote with Gabby and Allison and Kara and Mike against Carl, when it seems like that is not in his best interest. This is an explanation potentially for why he made that move.
Why are you going to win? Why are you not only not going to be the first one out, but you'll be the last one out?
I'll win. You know, first off, I feel like there's a bit of a glass ceiling on people like me in terms of winning. It's so far that I intend to break, where people like Steven either get to the end and they're, you know, they're, where they get no votes, or like Ryan got one vote, or they're cut right before the end. And so, but the way I think I'm going to break that ceiling is by making the game, I try to make it crazy enough where people don't know what the hell is going on. And as a consequence, if I have a little bit more information than everyone else, and no one can see that I'm in the position to win, that my hyperadaptivity will be what allows me to actually get to that finals and win. I think my goal generally is, Christian, just get to the finals, and then talk your game out with the jury and, you know, deal with it then.
What does it mean for the game to be so crazy that no one knows what's going on? Like, do you have ideas specifically for how that plays?
Yeah, I think that at some point it means me making a move that appears to be not in my best interest. Like, if I somehow sabotage an alliance that I'm in without giving away that it was me, that it was me, and as a consequence they think that, oh, who was this? Who did this? It couldn't have been these people because they're on the outs as a result, and, you know, and they have a good poker face about it. I mean, in many ways, sometimes I actually wonder if there's some strategy to strategically putting yourself on the bottom at an important point of the game. I feel like Adam did this accidentally at some point during Adam Klein, during his game. I think that if you view the game as a cycle of power, as opposed to having one party in power, as opposed to other one party in power picking off the small ones, and you embrace that cycle and say, okay, let's move it faster. You know, I'm in power right now. Let's take HHH. You know, you have that big group is picking off people one by one by one. What if one person in that group, you know, didn't just flip, but they gave a certain amount of information to the side on the bottom to know where to play their idol, and then flip it around a little bit.
Right.
You know, so I think that there is some that there's some value to seeing, to recognizing that there's a cycle to the game, and it eventually will come around.
Okay. Josh, we got a lot there from Christian.
Yes.
Can you help us make sense of everything he's talking about?
Also, it just occurs to me that back in the day, in like the early Wiggle Room, I would have like given you all of that setup for we've got this preseason interview with Christian, and it would have just been a musical number. So how far we have come, right?
Yeah. Like I think this might be we've compartmentalized all that stuff now.
I think this is the first like legitimate Wiggle Room exclusive time. A lot to parse out there, especially if you were having trouble hearing it through the rain. I apologize for Cyclone Josie. I think the big key there was Christian talking about how he feels like there was a cap on people of his type in terms of winning the game. People who are perceived as like that Cochrane character, whether that's Ryan or Fishback or whoever, sort of like the nerdy archetype, getting too close to the end and either getting shut out, getting just a vote here or there, or getting cut right before the end. And I think
even though Cochrane has actually won in the...
Yeah, but I think you're talking about like post-Cochrane at this point. I think like you're talking
about... Steven, in the case of he made it to the finals and lost before Cochrane played even once.
True. Fair enough. But I think, you know, we're not calling it the Fishback archetype. All due respect to Steven, who I know is an avid Wiggle Room listener. I think the point being, I think for Christian, I think that he was entering the season mindful of the fact that the optics on a player like him at this moment in Survivor history are such that that guy is a threat. That is a threatening person. And especially the closer to the end you get, the more apparent and obvious that's going to be. And Christian, being a scientist, I think was floating out this hypothesis that maybe it's going to be in his best interest later in the game, or at some critical point, he says a critical moment in the game, to do something that is not in his best interest, to make him somebody who is now suddenly on the bottom, because there may be an advantage to accepting the idea that Survivor is a cycle of power where people who are on the top of the mountain sometimes fall to the bottom, not by their own design. And so what if you are in that position of power and you select to move down the mountain on your own? Like, you make the conscious active choice to do something that lowers your standing. Maybe that reduces your threat level. Maybe that puts you in an advantageous position where the game is now so mixed up, now that the eggs have been poached to such a degree that you're the only one who knows how to cook them in the Bula Burger Bar. I think that is the idea of what he's saying. I think the actual one-to-one, like, you know, of this idea that he's floating out in the preseason versus how it's played out here with the Carl vote is not exact. In the preseason, he's talking about how it would be it was an idea that he was entertaining, that what if you flip the power and do something against your alliance without them knowing, unless these people are idiots. And I don't think that there's any reason to assume that they're idiots. They're going to figure out pretty quickly that Christian was in on the Carl vote. So I don't know quite how to explain that. But I do think that this idea must have been on his mind when he's making this vote against Carl.
And I think that perhaps Christian's logic might be flawed, and I think that his approach might be off here. And hear me out on this.
Oh, 100%.
I think that there are two great assets that Christian has in this game. Of course, one is his hyper analytical mind, a gifted scientist who has studied the algorithms of everything and can really apply that to strategy. And then, second of all, he has a great charismatic personality.
Yeah.
And I think it's the latter of those things that has been most responsible for his success in the game to this point, more so than the strategic part of his game. And I think that once the strategic part of his game starts to emerge, like as it would as somebody who is going to be seen as putting this vote together, I think then that threat level now becomes off the chart, where I think that what was keeping him safe was his charismatic personality in the first place. And I wonder if Christian, if he relied more on his social game, which I think has been really, really incredible, which probably beyond what we ever could have imagined.
Right.
I think that that is probably because Survivor is not a game played in an algorithm or with robots. That there are real people out there. And I think that when you are going to be making them scared or uneasy, I don't know necessarily. I mean, it worked for Tony. But don't forget, Tony also had a Tyler Perry swimsuit and idol in that season.
Right.
So I don't know. I think that if I was going to come up with the game plan for Christian, I don't like this idea for Christian.
I do wonder. I mean, you bring up Tony and we're talking about this season as, you know, best season of the 30s, I don't think is at least an extreme thing to say at this point. You know, depending on how these next couple of episodes shake out, I think that that's a very easy yes for me. And then you compare that to, you know, at least the best season of the 20s other than Heroes versus Villains in Kageyan. And you think about what the week to week was like on the Kageyan watch for the first time before we knew that Tony's, you know, mad scientist antics were actually the actions of a unicorn, a once in a lifetime Survivor player who was going to go on and improbably win this thing. And there were some moments along the way there that I remember many a contentious know-it-all that led to some sleepover allegations from Tony's part of, you know, is this thing that seems absolutely ridiculous, this crackpot idea of getting LJ out of the game with this lie that you've half-baked that seems totally unnecessary. Is this like the start of the fall for Tony? And in retrospect, not that these are like the genius masterstrokes that necessarily got him the win, but that guy goes on to win. I just wonder if we're in a moment in time right now where this looks bad for Christian. It sounds like it looks bad for Christian by design, whether or not that's going to be successful. But let's just assume the success story. And are we on a trajectory? Are we on that roller coaster the way that he described it earlier in the season, where this is going to be one of those really wacky outside the ideas that he's implemented that is actually either going to look really good in retrospect, or at least like a hiccup, like a hold your breath exhilarating moment on the ride towards his win?
Well, if we're going to look at it through the Tony prism, and, you know, I hesitate at even bringing the specter of Tony into this because that, you know, Tony was this unicorn. Tony would, on the odd numbers, he at I think it was at 9 and at 7 and at 5, he voted against his alliance. And then on the even numbers, swung back and voted with his alliance. And that's how he ultimately got to that point. I guess it would maybe that blueprint is out there, where then if Gabby and Christian potentially then could go back and rejoin Davey and Nick for this next vote and then take out somebody from the Goliaths who are also fractured. I mean, I think it's unlikely that Angelina goes back and votes with Allison and Mike and Kara, but I don't know if Gabby is necessarily incentivized to also be a Woo, who was a loyal soldier for Tony, that I think that Gabby certainly has a lot more agency in the game than Woo ever did.
100%, obviously. But I feel like, you know, just trying to like arc out what Christian might do next. Like if this is an intentional move to, you know, to kind of like upset the apple cart with his own people, to like cross the Mason-Dixon line, even to, you know, to upset his old allies and to upset the game to a certain degree. This is a guy with an immunity idol right now. Is his next move then to get people so upset at him that he's able to idle out a target of his choice? And does that get us to that next part of his equation of, I want to make the game so crazy that nobody knows what's going on but me? Like, if there are two votes in a row like this, where the Carl thing happens in a move that seems to be against his best interest, and then all the votes come to Christian in the next vote and he negates them and somebody else goes out, and now we're at the final seven in this moment where potentially Christian has just done something so wild to the, you know, the foundation of the game. Like if he takes out a fairly stable player in the ecosystem of David versus Goliath, does that reshuffle the deck for him? Does that reset the odds for him as you're making your way into that final six push, which is a boom, boom, boom towards the end of the game?
Well, I think it's unlikely that he could really leverage the idol like that, because that I believe that Davey and Nick know that he has it based on that conversation when they were all sharing like who has what advantages and what right. he doesn't know. He is the person that he talks about, the person that having knowing a little bit more than everybody else. But that person is actually Nick, who knows, you know, about that idol, and Davey as well knows about the other idol that they have. So if they are going to potentially go against the two Davids that are left, they could run into the idol that Nick found this week.
Yeah, true, true. I mean, that's something that he doesn't know, obviously. Yeah, so that's something that's hard to account for. Anyway, I just thought it was an interesting relic. I thought to get that explanation for what it seems like to me, that really reads of what he's thinking right now. And you know, I'll fancy Fencerton myself here as to like, I'm just excited to see where it falls. Mm-hmm. Whether or not this is a good move, I think history is about to decide for us. But I'm excited that he made it, and I'm excited to see it. And I think an instructive thing for me about the way that Christian is playing the game is that moment he has earlier in the season where he talks about, I'm only going to play a survivor once, which, you know, I kind of don't believe.
Yeah.
But like this idea of this, I may never get this chance again. And here I am improbably on survivor, and I want to play survivor. And I think that married with his idea of how other people view his type in the game and view him specifically in the game, you may as well be swinging pretty big right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm glad he did it, because it's a much more exciting outcome than if it had just been Dr. Allison who got knocked out. Maybe a bad move for Christian ultimately, but a great move for the folks back home.
Yeah, and a great moment, as you mentioned in the episode, where Christian gave it his all in that immunity challenge, and it was so epic. You know, we do talk about the story here on The Wiggle Room, that I thought it might be fun to listen back to that one more time before we head into the 12th episode of this Survivor season. So I want to take it back to when Christian was up there heading into his real stretch where he was going to turn on the afterburners against Alec.
Hey, Jeff.
Yep.
Is it okay if I tell a story to pass the time? Is that all right?
Yeah.
So I was working out a project that it was about plant root growth.
Now, okay, first off, I credit to the Survivor, you know, sound design, where the music that comes on, it's like, oh, wait, hold on. What's happening? It's really just that great Survivor music cue at the point where he says he wants to tell the story.
It's also just spectacular that he's talking about plant root growth. I mean, I thought that he was a robotic scientist, not a botanist. I mean, is he like a big Beast Machines guy?
Maybe
when they married the Beast Wars characters and they took them back to Cybertron and then they became techno organic robots. Is that what he's working on here?
I think so. I think I remember that. Was which sector of First One Out was that clip in?
I gotta go. I deleted my table of contents after I just perused them, so we may never know.
Story to pass the time. Is that all right?
Yeah.
So I was working on a project that it was about plant root growth.
Stay focused, Christian.
This helps me focus, Carl. Thank you.
Got you, babe.
Okay.
That is maybe the underrated moment of the whole exchange. I mean, we're about to go through, so we'll find all the gold. But that moment is...
Got you, babe.
I love it. I love it. Carl, in like the full, like the 2 hour episode was such a great event for Carl. Like the whole rise and fall of Carl and having him be inebriated through so much of it. And just him like lazily being under the bleachers and like being like, stay focused, Christian. Got you, babe. It's just
got you, babe.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Should he have texted that to Christian up there during the immunity challenge?
Babe.
Got babe. You, babe.
It's so good. It's so, so good. It's I died watching that. That was so spectacular.
Back to Christian.
So it's my job to sort of quickly like throw together a circumnutating plant robot. So I'm taking a bunch of parts and just
basically I had to tell people that, look, it's one thing to have a robot.
That's the sort of thing we think about, like exoskeleton research.
Oh my God, bro.
Oh my God, bro.
Well, it was so fun that not only is he doing this, but then the effect that it's having on Alec was so funny.
It was amazing. Yeah. And the whole, you know, beginning, like the first half, at least maybe the first like two thirds of the story arc of the challenge are how Alec, he's like very quietly assassinating everybody.
Yeah,
like,
you know, I'm going to win.
Yeah, I'm going to win. It's like, you're about to die. You're about to drop off. Like, he's just like muttering to himself very, very quietly. So the difference in tone and the difference in tactics between these two individuals, when you're looking at it as that David versus Goliath matchup, it's just so pronounced.
Who's up for 20 questions? Hey, Probst, I'm starting to look at this as a different kind of opportunity, Jeff. You're kind of my captive audience. Do you know what a Reuben sandwich is, Jeff?
Where do you think the conversation was before we got to the line, the non sequitur? Jeff, do you know what a Reuben sandwich is?
How did he get to the Reuben sandwich? How did he get to the Reuben sandwich? So this is a 6-hour challenge. Gabby drops out at like 2.5 hours, right? I think somewhere around there. So we're talking about a whole chunk of challenge of presumably Christian just yammering on. There is so much material out there that they threw in the Reuben sandwich. You can't imagine that the Reuben sandwich is like the most interesting thing he said, but because it is so random, it is instantly just
it is the epitome of boring conversation during a challenge.
Dearest Scooter. So good.
Do you think Jeff Probst has heard of a Reuben sandwich?
I have to imagine, but then again, he apparently has never seen a plate of nachos before, given how high he was hyping the Survivor nachos. So it's not impossible to me that Jeff has never seen a Reuben.
Can you get a Reuben sandwich at the Bula Burger Bar?
Definitely not. No. You may be
Bula Burger Bar. We've got the meats too.
No, I don't think that they've got Reubens at the Bula Burger Bar. I don't think that they've got a New York deli on the menu.
Do you think that in a future season we could see Christian come and then the survivors will get a reward to go to Christian's Reuben Bar?
Yeah. Reubens, macarons, these tiny little sandwiches that have nice colors on them.
You know what a macaron is, Jeff? Like kind of like little tiny, little colorful sandwiches.
I never grew a beard in my life, Jeff, by the way.
Jeff, by the way, now you know what it's like to live with me. You hear my voice for hours. It's torture.
And the zoom in on Alec's face is so ridiculous.
It was so funny. So like, ha ha ha, we're all laughing. But then we have this really serious moment where then Alec is asking for Christian to let him have this. And we have this.
Christian, you're safe. I'm not.
I know.
Which is really also amazing. The Han Solo.
Yeah, I know. As Alec is about to be lowered into carbonite, shipped off to Jabba the Hutt.
I know how you must feel in this moment. And I hear you. I might never get this opportunity again.
And that was just such a poignant moment. And of course, laughable. Christian might not get the opportunity again at this point, right?
Right, of course, absolutely.
Yeah, but I'm sure in the moment, it's not a foregone. I may not get this opportunity again, so... but such a great one. And then Alec just like walks off.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he's talked about this in the exit press. And I loved talking to Alec and like getting his perspective on how that whole challenge went down. And for him, it was just like it's so relatable, at least to me. I don't know if it's universally relatable. I think it is. But this idea that like he's in the middle of this very difficult task and he's, you know, so focused, he's all in, he's all of his energy is directed towards just completing this one mission. But there's that voice inside. There's that like one strand of doubt that's like, you know, you could just stop. You could stop at any time.
Oh my God, bro.
You could just let go, bro. You could just get off. And he talked about that, of like how there was this like, you know, reverberation through his mind of like this voice that was saying like, you could just step off. You could just, it would be so easy for you to just release your hands and move forward. And ultimately that voice won. is crazy. Like, that's such, it's just such a human moment. I think that is why this whole challenge plays so well. And like, to, you know, to be, it's lost in the shuffle because the final encounter is so epic, but even like the Gabby moment is so great. Even like the drama that's happening on the sidelines with this moment where, is it Angelina and Carl who like are toasting? They're like, to the bitter end, like
to the future, to the future,
to the future. Like, it's just like, there's so many tiny little moments that I think one of the true hallmarks of this season, one of its real victories, has been giving us so many moments where it's not just about the blind side and it's not just about the outcome. It really is about stopping and smelling the roses of what Survivor is all about. And this challenge is such a clutch example of that. It was just beautiful. It was artfully done. Really, really great. And very great in terms of the theme as well. Once again, the theme is showing up. And sure, the casting on it may be a little weird, but the theme itself, I think, is actually really fueling the season in a strong way.
Okay. So, speaking of fuel, the survivors were running out of rice this week, and another super memorable moment from this week's episode had to do with the big negotiation that Angelina put together. And so for this segment, I'd like to discuss what was going on with the negotiation, and we have an intro to this segment.
Oh my gosh.
So the tribe was wondering if you were open to a negotiation regarding rice.
Rice time negotiator.
I saw that on Twitter and now it's a song.
Courtesy of your friend Shut Up Tim.
Oh my God, that is Shut Up Tim's finest work. It was on key, pretty much.
It was short enough.
It was short. It was mercifully short. You could replay it over and over again, and I wouldn't get bored with it. That's a cute.
So the tribe was wondering if you were open to a negotiation regarding rice.
Rice time negotiator.
Yeah, definitely his best work. We don't actually have anything to talk about with the negotiation, right? It was just an excuse to play the Shut Up Tim song, I assume.
I mean, maybe people are interested in getting your take about it.
My take was, it was incredibly hilarious and amazing and wonderful. And I have not taken advanced negotiations 101 or 201, so I can't really weigh in on the tactics themselves. I would point you in the direction of Angelina Keeley's Twitter feed.
So let me then point you in the future seasons, because I love to take in the evolution strategy, we often like take a look back. Okay, here right. was the point where this ended up going off and this was responsible for this. So Survivor 39, how likely are we to see survivors say like, hey, don't worry about, eat as much as you want. We'll just negotiate with, like, I almost feel like the teeth of what Jeff is going to potentially do, like, it's been so widely talked about that I kind of feel like a super fan coming into Survivor 39 is like, we got this, don't worry, Jeff, we'd like to negotiate for more rice, please, garçon.
Right. Maitre d'. I think it, I mean, you got to have a person who is following that stuff that is going to be unafraid to declare themselves enough of a Survivor fan to like really throw that out there, I think. But I feel like it cuts both ways, right? Like, you can imagine the scenario where, yeah, they're like, we can negotiate for this eventually and we can come up with a really good deal that's not going to be too harmful for us in the long run. But on the other end of it, you got to imagine that if another negotiation scenario emerges for Probst, that the cost will be greater than it was this week.
I should hope so. Because I feel like the people are just coming like, well, I just won't vote tonight. Not even that. I just won't play in the challenge. I mean, which right. was a super low price tag in terms of what other survivors have paid. They got off really easy this time around. So I do think that this is something that Survivor is going to have to take a look at, because I think I have a good sense of how the players think out there. And, you know, I do think you'll see the tribes eating more because they won't be afraid. It's also interesting that I think this is the first time that we've seen this going back to after the merge, where, I mean, the last times that we saw this in Survivor San Juan del Sur was in the pre-merge game, where then there's sort of like an issue of fairness. It's like a tougher thing to navigate for Jeff and for production, where it's like, hold on, well, if we give you guys more rice, then we have to give the other tribe more rights, or we have to, you know, in the case of Hunapu versus, I don't even remember who the other guys were, but it was like, okay, you guys ate all your rice and then you won challenges because you ate all your rice, and now we have to take everything away that you won. And so you don't really have that dynamic when you get to the merged tribe.
Right. It was Quayopa, by the way.
Yeah, yes. How quickly we forget.
I was desperately trying to type and find that out by the time that you were finished speaking so that I could just say that immediately, because I definitely didn't remember it on my own, just to be completely honest.
Another orange tribe.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, no, I think you're right on the money on all of that. I'm excited to see it. I mean, I think especially if Probst can respond with something that discourages it from happening too often in the future. I'm up for seeing like another negotiation in the near future that is going to be one of, few future, like near future negotiations. Like, I don't want this to become like the new stand up at tribal council and go over and talk to somebody and whisper like in front of everybody, where there's been no penalty for that. As far as gameplay, like, you know, the survivor hasn't, you know, slapped any wrists for, getting up and going over to somebody and talking. I think, for this, like, I think that this is a situation where it could get out of control, and like the negotiation is broken in the way that survivor feels like the auction is broken. By the way, in the interview with Gabby said that not only was Christian interrogating Probst, but eventually like everybody started interrogating Probst while Christian was just yammering on. Mm-hmm. And they were asking him all sorts of different questions, including whether they'll bring the survivor auction back. And I didn't get an answer from Gabby on what that answer was, but either the next time we're speaking with Jeff, we got to get the answer to that, or whoever we're talking to in the exit interview next. Do you remember what Jeff's answer was? Because we want to know, are they bringing the survivor auction back?
Yeah.
What did he say?
I wonder. So we haven't seen one of these long challenges like this where, you know, the contestants, you know, they're around Jeff for such a short period of time and they're active. Does Jeff like being out there in the peanut gallery with these guys for an extended period?
I wish that there was like honest footage of what Jeff looked like in those moments where Alec looked so miserable. Because yeah. I got to imagine that there's a shot or 3,000 of Jeff that looks just like looks like Alec. If you think 3,000 is too high, then maybe 2,501. I think Probst was probably fairly miserable. I think that there is.
Oh my God, bro!
There is definitely truth to the idea that like this is the kind of stuff that Probst loves. When it's raining, he really does love working in the rain. It feels elemental to him, and I think that he's a big fan of that. But 6 hours on your feet in the boiling heat, it sounded like it was really, really freaking hot out there, and you really can't move anywhere. And not only that, this is interfering with production, so there's some logistical things to consider there. Yeah. This was also from the Gabby interview that the challenge went so long, which is why it bought them an extra day to go back to camp so that they could have a full day before nighttime.
I thought that was planned. I didn't realize that was all because Jeff said, all right, tomorrow night you'll come back and we'll vote. And sometimes they do in the 3-day cycle run the challenge on the middle day for right. whatever reason. But interesting yeah. that happened that way.
If you take Gabby's account at face value, at least. Yeah. So
not a bad play for Alec if he's going to get voted off to make the challenge go long enough to say another day to scramble.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. I mean, I don't doubt that. That was on his mind.
Certainly not. Certainly not. Yeah. Okay. Josh, I want to play you another clip from a secret scene. And I want to talk a little bit about Mike White in terms of how he's playing, because I thought he did have a pretty good hour in the second hour of this episode. This was not from the episode, so maybe not everybody has heard this, but Mike is defining his strategy a little bit here. And I touched on this with Rourke in the feedback show we did over the weekend, which was very
fun. Your podcast with Rourke was fantastic.
She's great.
That was one of the best podcasts you've done in a very long time. Just a gush. I thought that was a really, really fun podcast. Everyone who hasn't listened to it should really check it out.
She's a great guest. Okay, let's talk about... here's Mike White talking about his strategy in the game.
I don't think people see me as an imminent threat or a long-term threat, and I'd like to keep it that way. I feel like my power position is really the quiet advisor that gets the earworm into people's heads.
Yeah, but you, well, not only that, it's like, I need you and I want to work with you and
you're just, you're the person that I trust the most out here.
I'm just trying to subtly make my moves. It'll help me keep my low profile, but if I get to the end, I can point out these little tidbits of manipulation that allowed me to get there, and that actually showed that I really did impact the game.
Okay, so Josh.
So wait, was that Angelina who was talking to him?
Yes, he talked to Angelina.
I need you and I want you is phenomenal. Phenomenal stuff. Mike is exactly where he needs to be and wants to be.
Yeah, so he's done a really good job of staying under the radar for somebody who we thought could come in and be, you know, seen as like, okay, well, let's get rid of this guy right away. But
Jimmy Johnson.
Is Mike White playing the perfect Varys game, Josh?
The perfect Varys.
Is he the spider?
I think I trust Varys having a winning strategy more than I trust Mike having a winning strategy. and I say that with all due respect, because when we're talking about Varys, we're talking about one of the great game changers of Westeros. And Mike White is phenomenal, but is he Varys levels of phenomenal? I don't know.
Not buying it.
I don't know that I'm buying it. I think that he's in a great position right now. I think that if his idea is, I don't want anybody to know that I am a threat. I don't want anyone to think about me as a long-term threat or an immediate threat. I think he's probably right on that. I think everybody, and we saw it in this episode, I think people have fairly neutral positions on Mike, where there's a little bit of a wariness about him, as we saw with like the, he is an actor, he could be acting right now. There is a little tiny bit of that, but he was still needed in order to get the Carl vote off the ground. So I think that he's in a good place for some. He's in a good place for now, but I just wonder, like, where is that killer move? I do think that he is somebody that is going to have to make some kind of like pronounced move. And he tried to do it earlier in the season when he tried to rally the forces against Christian. If he gets a second shot at that and can be determined as like the leader of that movement, or an instrumental person in another movement that is not a rock star pun, at least not an intentional one. And maybe that's it. Maybe it's like finding some moment to like dethrone Nick, you know, something like that. But I think Mike needs one of those if he's going to get to the end and have that final winning argument. Otherwise, I do think that like the argument that gets tossed out there at final tribal council is like, Mike played a really good down the middle game, but what did he really do? Also, he's Mike White, you know, like that's the moment where like this idea of like, does the multimillionaire stand a chance at winning Survivor? I think they do if they've really shown why. And I just haven't seen that from Mike yet, but I'm really curious to see if he's got that in him. I would love nothing more than to see him really make a case for himself in that regard.
I would have liked to have seen Mike be one of the people that sat out that first challenge for a chance to eat at the world's biggest nachos.
That's so ridiculous. The world's biggest nachos. It's like, I mean, who am I, right? I'm the one who said that this is the best season of Survivor in 4 episodes. So I guess I should rein it in.
Yes, because I felt like that we had a good opportunity for a nacho libre pun.
Yes. Oh, well, there it is. You got it. Oh my God. Well, if John was still in the game too, and if Mike and John were feasting on nachos, then Survivor Reddit would forget all about Dr. Allison and would go all in on the Nacho Libre memes.
Oh my God, I'm so fat.
Okay. And then one final thing on Angelina that we heard about where she attended college. But after we heard this from her at the tribal council, is it possible that we also know where she went to high school?
Clear eyes and full hearts for certain people here.
Was she one of the Dillon Panthers?
I think it's possible East Dillon Lions is not out of the realm of possibility here.
They were the Lions?
Oh, I guess somebody is revealing that they didn't watch all the way through Friday Night Lights.
Oh, what, they changed the team name?
I'm not going to spoil it, but there's some drama. I'll say this, the Dillon Panthers.
Oh,
what'd
they do? Like
away.
The last season was like a different school.
I don't want to spoil it. It's a great story arc. All I'll say is the Dillon Panthers aren't, it's not the only football team of note in Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. I don't know if that's canon.
It's absolutely canon.
Is it like a Saved by the Bell, the new class?
No, it's not. It's a great, great story arc, and it's phenomenal. And it's, oh my God, I'm getting a little misty thinking about it. A little Misty Giles over here.
Missy? Muffin?
Who's Muffin?
All right.
Can we get to the Wandoff? We're all right. All right. This thing. How long are we going to be here?
I don't know. Look, that
I've got latkes to eat. It's Wandica. Come on.
Sorry. Happy Wandica. Look, yes, it's our 2,501st episode of Robin's Podcast,
but it's only our
2,501st episode of Robin's Podcast. Okay.
Oh, my God. How are we doing? Are we having, is this better than
I think
the
this is a great
segment?
One. This is a great one. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Here we go. So let's, before we get to the Wandoff,
like the largest pumpkin. And pie if they had brought that out as a reward.
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah, they should time, because, you know, Survivor sort of like ends like, you know, a week or two before Christmas. So I feel like they never really tie in like the holiday season. They should have like put like, you know, a wreath up at the final tribal council. I feel like.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Oh, my God. Why do I have a feeling that's not the last time we're going to hear about that this month? Oh, my God.
Why not? Why not?
Unbelievable.
Mix it up.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
I guess I have to say, just before we move on from the nachos, that the coagulated cheese was one of the worst offenses I've ever seen on Survivor.
Back to the nacho libre.
It was just so gross, man. It was so gross. It's like that. And then the worst part, I mean, I know that like the Survivor social media team is a little bit under fire from certain people right now for certain tweets. The tweet where I think it was at the start of the second hour, it was like, who's hungry for more Survivor? And it was like an extreme close up of the nacho bowl. Gag me. Now I'm the one who's puking and I didn't even eat any wraps.
Yeah, I saw that you responded to that tweet. You were just like, really?
I think I said
you were highly offended.
I think I quote tweeted it and said I missed the Bula Burger Bar.
You replied to delete your account, I think, was what you said.
It's just unbelievable. Just get out of here with that nacho disgustingness. Leave it.
All right.
Thank you.
All
next. Right.
Of course, before we get to the Wandoff, this week's Wandoff is sponsored by our friends over at Legacy Box. Legacy Box is a great idea any time of year to create a amazing gift for another person in your family or for yourself, because the Legacy Box is going to help you solve the problem of having all these old movies on all sorts of different media, where then you can finally get them digitized so you can actually go back and watch and relive all of those memories from your childhood and days gone by. Josh, you have all of those old game tapes from your time playing for the Lions in high school.
I thought that you were going to out me for all of like the times that I played my Japanese role playing games on my TV in my house when I was in high school, and I recorded myself playing those games, and those VHS tapes exist somewhere.
Yes, don't you need to get those digitized, stat?
I kind of want to. I feel like they might do well on YouTube.
All right, well, here's what you do. Legacy Box, they send you the super safe box, which is going to protect your valuable one-of-a-kind media. And then what you do is you load up the box with everything you want to have digitized, and they do the rest, barcode everything. They do it all by hand, sending you email steps along the way at Legacy Box, and they've got a great offer for our listeners. All you have to do is go to Legacy Box and use the promo code ROB to save 40% off today. Legacy Box is the world's largest, most trusted digitizer of home movies and photos. Over 450,000 families have trusted Legacy Box over a decade of experience, and all the work is done by hand right here in the USA. There's never been a better time to digitally preserve your memories. Go to LegacyBox.com today to get started. Plus, for a limited time, they're offering our listeners an exclusive discount. Go to LegacyBox.com/Rob to get 40% off your first order, or save up to $200 on the largest Legacy Box kit. Go to LegacyBox.com/Rob and save 40% today. Get started preserving your past. Josh, how old are you in those videos playing the Japanese role-playing game?
Probably like 16, 15, 16, 17, somewhere in that range, I would say. I did a lot of like work to like plug in the PlayStation to the TV with a, that had like a VCR built into it that you could just like record the actual. It was like a screen capture, an old school screen capture is what I was doing.
And can we hear you talking on it?
No, you can't hear it. It's literally just like the game. It's like you're watching the game, but you can't see me. So maybe that's less exciting.
So maybe you should do like a Twitch stream where then you're like doing the play by play now.
I could do that. I could absolutely do that. That's an option on the table. I just wanted it so I could just watch the Xenogears story and not have to play it again.
Stop right there. You wanna know right now? Before you go any further, this is Wanda, and you're in my arena. If you need to, you can straight up leave here. It would make me so happy for the rest of my life if you'd shut the shirk up and just eat your damn rice. It's the Wanda. It's the Wanda forever. If you need to, you can straight up leave here, but it'll make you so happy for the rest of your life if you turn the songs up and turn out to me nice. You wanna know right now? Before you go any further, it's the Wanda. It'll be here forever.
Wanda off time, Josh.
We didn't have YouTube. I couldn't just like Google the great clips from the games. I needed to create
the cutscenes
myself. Yeah, the cutscenes or like the great boss battles, the moments of music that were delightful. So don't shame me.
I'm not shaming.
I did worse things. Trust me. This is not the worst thing that I did.
Okay. Josh, we are closing in on the end of the season here in the Wand Off. And so I guess this is a good point to sort of just stop down, talk about where we are on the calendar.
Right there. Stop right there
and talk about what is coming up here on the Wand Off and where we are. Because right now, this is the Wand Off for episode number 10 and 11.
Right.
Next week, we'll have one more chance for the listeners to be able to win their way into the final Wand Off competition, right?
Right.
And then next week, the week after the episode number 13, that is going to be the week we are going to listen to our final Wand Off entries for the season.
Yes.
And then we'll reveal the winner of the final Wand Off on the final Wiggle Room of the season and of the year, the day after the Survivor finale.
So that means that this week and next week are the final opportunities to get into the final Wand Off.
Yes.
So there are two more acts that will wind up in the final Wand Off, assuming no repeat winners in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, and we've got a few repeat winners along the way this season. So
and stop me if this is a crazy idea. It was just something that I was thinking about. And if it's a terrible idea, garbage idea, delete this from the podcast. Okay.
Yes.
This was a 2-hour episode of Survivor that we just watched. What if we walk away from this week of the Wand Off with two spots for the final Wand Off claimed? An additional spot this week that there are two winners from this coming pool of Wand Offers. That way it grows out our musical delights for the final Wand Off. We give somebody an additional shot here that may not have gotten a shot otherwise. A little bit of a wild card, if you will.
Okay. So I am open to a top two this week because that we, you know, do have repeat winners. But if it's there is a chance that one or two could be somebody that maybe already won this season. So right. It may not actually be adding two people, but somebody might sneak in a second placer. And then the first placer was already in the final Wand Off.
Yeah, and if it's exactly. I think that's the idea. So
but do they get a hat? The second placer, they get the hat?
The second placer, does the second placer get a hat? That's a great question. If the first placer is somebody who already has a hat, then yes. If not,
what if the second placer is somebody that already has a hat?
Then no.
Okay. All right. No. If you don't have a hat, we'll send you a hat if you're second place this week and you're going to the final Wand Off. Okay.
Yes. And then the jacket remains in development under lock and key, the strictest of secrecy as we are designing the winning jacket for the champion of the final Wand Off.
Okay, so all that underway. Also, just to put it out there, last year we did have a holiday wand off, but based on the fact there's only so many Christmas songs that we will not do a special holiday wand off this year. But feel free to send us your holiday themed wand offs for contention for next week's wand off as well.
The holiday wand off may return at some point in the future, but just not this year.
We don't need to do it every year. Again,
I agree.
I'm a strong believer. There's somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 good Christmas songs. And then, we'll listen to them, over and over and all the rest for 47 days.
Frankly, I'm thrilled with that.
What's longer, Josh? The holiday season or the Australian Survivor season? Which is longer?
Well, I think if you strung the Australian Survivor season out for like one episode per week, rather than five episodes in a day or whatever it is, then I think it would be the Australian Survivor season. But just in terms of time spent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's get into the results from last week's wand off. Okay. I can tell you that this one was a bit of a blowout. So,
okay.
In third place, with 11.29% of the vote, it was Jess East and Will A with a Bing Bing.
Bing.
In second place, it was the artist Shut Up Phil with 14.26% of the vote for You Really Screwed Me, Carl, which I thought was a really good one.
Screwed Me, Carl, I believe was the pronunciation.
Yes. And then it was a big blowout, maybe the biggest blowout of the season, with 53.27% of the vote. A majority of voters, and a plurality as well, they ended up voting for Mr. DJ LaBelle Klein with his Village People remix. Yeah.
Wow. And who knew that there would be a cause for a Nacho Man parody this week? I wonder if we got one of those.
Nacho Libre. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So DJ
LaBelle
Klein
of season one.
He has officially earned his first wombat hat of the season. So congratulations to DJ LaBelle Klein, and bad news for the rest of the season 37 wand off winners, that DJ LaBelle Klein will be in the finals once again. Okay.
That was a very fun medley. So a well-earned hat, DJ LaBelle Klein.
All right. So let's bring in the host of the wand off, the late, great Casey Kasem. Rob, it's a pleasure and an honor and a jervis to be back with you here in the wand off.
Happy Wandica, Casey.
Happy Wandica to you too, Josh. All right, let's get into this week's honorable mentions for this double episode of Survivor. We'll start off our honorable mentions this week with a little bit of that holiday magic. In fact, we'll start with a song that comes to us from Sammy and from a guy named Josh Wiggler. On good authority that is the George Bushy of Tushy 43, so it's still okay.
Oh my goodness. Jesus. I can't even get into the top five in my own Survivor song parody competition.
Remix,
yeah, it doesn't count. Great to hear the backing track. I was a little off key, I guess. I guess it depends on instrumental track you're taking. Forget it. Sorry. I'm just gonna
Josh,
So many of us are celebrating with that festive holiday spirit. And that includes Mr. Jason Lee, who's got another holiday tribute. This time, it's for Carl.
Carl got screwed over by production at the word puzzle on day 30. They might say that's not the word we wanted, but Rob thinks it should count, and I agree.
It looked like a good word to me.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Rob. We didn't even talk about the fact that your winner pick is no longer in contention here. I'm sorry. That must be painful for you.
Well, Rob is used to it, Josh.
Not your first rodeo.
It's not my first rodeo.
Yeah.
Speaking of Carl, let's check in with Becky and Taylor, who wanted to talk a little bit about what Carl had going on at the reward.
He stumbles here, stumbles there, tells Carol Allison, and lies down in the hammock for a nap. Carl is so drunk. Carl's so drunk. Carl is so drunk. Carl's really drunk. Carl is so drunk. So drunk. Carl is so drunk. Carl got f***ed up.
That's great.
That's from the funkadelic band Parl James Clement.
Wonderful.
Next up, we have a listener that comes to us from the City of Angels. His name is Sheldon.
Jeff, baby, Jeff, baby, there's something to talk about. We need price and I can start unless you want to put the first offer out. Make me an offer, I'll counter offer. See, Jeff, I know jargon. I went to Yale, I took a class like Dr. Strange. I've come to bargain. We'll give you our entire camp. Just take it all tools around. For the cooking, for the fishing, the comfort chairs for sitting down. And the coffee and the tea, don't forget about these. You gotta start it low, that's just what you do. You'll take everything from us, but really, I'm low. Balling you and me, Jeffrey, are negotiating. So let's do it like they taught me in that class at New Haven.
I went to Yale.
You and me, Jeffrey, are negotiating. So let's do it like they taught me in that class at New Haven.
I'm a hero now.
That was a great song by the band The Blood Versus Waterhound Gang.
Oh my God. There's a joke to be had about put your hand down Dan's pants and you'll feel an idol. I don't know.
It is
in there somewhere. Yes, that's right. Somewhere in there.
Next up, we have a song from a listener who claims to be a man named Rob coming from the city of Boston, but based on the accent, I'll guess it's not the guy who I once shared a beach with or robbed him.
Which one are you today?
I'm having a mental break.
The lines are blurred.
You know what they say? That the brain has only a 2,500 podcast warranty.
Oh, no. Oh, God, it's broken. This is the first of a new era.
Here's Rob from Boston talking about Christian in that epic immunity challenge.
Got so much to say, so much to say. Christian Big E, so much to say. He's got so much to say, so much to say. Christian Big E, so much to say.
So I'm taking a bunch of parts.
Basically, I had to tell people that, look, it's one thing to have a robot.
That's sort of thing we've been doing. Like exoskeleton research.
Oh my God, bro.
So much to say, so much to say. Christian Biggie, so much to say. Oh, no. Groups just count the votes and
Let me out. Little Wonder.
That was a hit from the band. That was a hit from the great group, the Dave Matthews Band, from the finale.
Dave Matthews shouldn't have gone on Instagram and spoiled the season. What do you want to do? Did he say let me out or let me out at the end of the song?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Have to look at
it's
the lyric question. Sheet. Yeah.
Next up, we'll hear from another person from Boston. It's Michael Clark talking about Carl.
And I guess that is why Carl loves booze. Time on a pole could be time drinking brew. Toast into future, laugh like hyena. Housing some nachos with Angelina. And I guess that is why Carl loves booze.
A beautiful ballad from Elton Johnny Mundo.
Oh, my God. Great to see you the other day, Michael. Oh, my God. Fantastic.
Next up, we've got another Wandoff staple. He's a man that goes by many names. And here is Phil T with a new collaborator talking about how Alec went out of the game.
Didn't know what to think when he hit the sand. Now here's the guy you're supposed to sit with.
Monkey Flash Surfer from Clemente. They call me Alec, I've got no MBA. You want a lemon or a lime, a lime or a lemon? I'll smack a top flip, drop down and get pitted. 5 foot barrels on glassy floors. Now I'm bent over puking in child's pose. Step on probes, get out my way. You think he's about to send me on a flight to see time's up. I'm going home.
At least my instant filter game is hella on fleek.
No CS. No seat at the reunion. No seat at the reunion.
That was a great jam from the Challenge Beastie Boys.
Beast Mode Cowboys.
And finally, Josh, we've got one other honorable mention, and it comes to us from a new Wandoff team of collaborators. They go by the name of Puya and Liana. You can call them Piana.
And I will. I choose to.
Here is another love song, a love ballad between Alec and the fine people at CBS.
I showed you a contract. You signed that NDA. Yeah, you signed your rights away. But then you, how could you? From the finale you are banned. Cause you went on Instagram. I wanna let you know how I feel. Fuck your big boobs, I don't want them now. Fuck your fire, I'm glad I snuffed it out. Fuck your coiffed hair makes you look like a quack. Fuck you, Alec, I don't want you back. Fuck it, you said, and then took a bow. Fuck your appearance, be that is ours now. It should have been you that got med evac'd. Fuck it instead, we'll bring back Pat.
I'm sorry that I'm not who you thought I'd be. I couldn't spell Jeremy. I played well. I even made some fans. I just want a second chance. Give me another glance. I promise I'll be your next Isaiah. Fuck it, I said. I regret that now. Fuck social media. I'll take a a vow to do what I can to get back on track. Fuck all my pride, just please have me back. You must have liked me to give me that praise. I swear I'm not Dan on that romantic praise. I'm so sorry, this show's all I have left. I love you, my lord. Oh no, I mean Jeff.
That was a beautiful ballad from E. Monica Culpepper.
It's really sad that he's not going to be there. You think they're going to like Skype him in FaceTime?
It just goes to show you an important lesson that we learn every week here in the Wiggle Room. You can't spell Wanda without NDA. Josh, here come this week's honorable mentions. If I knew we were going to have two winners, I would have had six.
Okay.
But it's just a top five, the top five Wandoff songs in the country.
Let's hear them.
We'll start things off with Bob from Columbus. And he's talking about that immunity challenge from the first hour of Survivor.
Stand on this small narrow perch. Don't think about them nachos. You've got this challenge under control.
Your clan
is dropping like flies.
They're all doomed.
Wiggle twisting, you're persisting. See ya, Dr. Allison. Boom. This challenge requires an uncomfortable stance, and you're being heckled by some gray yoga pants. Her chances of winning are 0.0. And Mike White would look better in a sombrero. So stand
by Gabby.
Now it's just a standoff with Dr. Christian Kubicki. His plan,
and I quote,
is to torture all of us with tales of robot plant root growth.
Stand
up to this psychosis,
my God, bro.
He is jabbering on and on about a Reuben sandwich man. And no, it's really corned beef.
Macaroni.
Focus, Alec. Oh no, he's proposed some 20 questions.
Stand
for another key change.
Flamboyant.
Stand from the reunion stage.
Clairvoyant.
You're good. You've got this. You are gonna win. Ignore the nerd, his hallucinogens. So, oh.
That was excellent.
That was a great one from the group REMINGTON.
Always a classic to hear from REMINGTON.
An oldie, but a goodie.
Yes, yes. Very, very good. Also, plant root growth being a robot thing is probably, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I just don't know what that is.
Next up, Josh, we've got a guy who's on an immunity run of his own. Here is the winner of last week's Wandoff. He is the winner of the Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers final Wandoff as well. Here he is going for two in a row, the great DJ LaBelle Klein.
Oh, man.
Tonight, gonna tweet about some Survivor. I'm tweeting live, and the world will soon agree with me, and R-O-U-N-D-H-O-W-A-R-D, but don't at me now. Don't at me. It's the best season ever, and it keeps getting better. It's every time that I talk to Rob, and I get texted big from Emily. Love the editing, like how Christian held everyone captive, and how now Carl can talk telepathically. Don't you even try, damn. 280 characters don't come for me, you know I'm right. It's more than just Nick and Mike White. It's like I'm watching Godfather Part 1 and Part 2. Don't
at me now. I'm having such a good time, like a cat with a ball.
Oh, baby, don't at me now.
Like margaritas with the lime, I'm so drunk I could fall.
Like baby,
don't at me
my
now.
My reasoning's perfect.
Don't at me. This season we were left with the best season of them all.
That was another beautiful ballad from the band Queen, led by Freddie Mercury Kelly.
I thought it was going to be We Stan a Crying Queen.
It can also be that.
Is that from my perspective? Was that a top five WandaVision about my tweets?
That is from the perspective of Josh Wiggler. You are the hero of this narrative. From Josh Wiggler, the musical.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm in for that. That sounds fun. We're in a weird place.
Gotcha, mate.
In a weird place.
Josh, next
that
up.
Was a shout out? Was that a shout out? Was that a babe shout out?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was.
Yes.
Bing. Next up, it's our good buddy, Corey B. And he's back to talk about the Bing Master himself. On reward, here is Corey B.
With the power I got, I call all the shots, and I just won my first reward. No matter the cost, I'm gonna be sloshed, and I'm excited as I jump aboard. But the Godfather knew that a lasso of truth and a boatload of beer were the same. So I told her allies, stop telling Allison hi. 'Cause I want her out of the game. 'Cause I got plans and I'm so wasted. Throwing details out as the fear chases my game away to Mike and Kara Kay. Hey, I don't care about being hated, 'cause I've got fried chicken and it's so tasty. So I got plans. But I'm so wasted. They scrambled, it sucks. It was sunny side up, but now there's egg on my face. I know Gabby and I don't see eye to eye, and she knew she was being replaced. Hey, I didn't know I was on cruise control, but if I could do it again, so I would try to take all of the power. I'd lose it again. 'Cause I got plans and I'm so wasted, where perceptions fail and my tribe chases my game away. 'Cause I overplay. Hey, I'm not big on negotiations, but I know I'm fine being audacious, so I've got plans, but I'm so wasted.
Great job there by the artist, yep, Garth, yep. Brooke Garrity.
Yeah, it's the only choice, right?
Nope. Garth Brooke struck also.
What are we doing?
Flip a coin.
What are we doing?
What are we doing?
What are we doing?
It's a little late for that, don't you think? The number four Wandoff in the country comes to us on a week of Wandoff superstars. It's probably one of the most competitive top fives that we've ever had. Here is Jenny and Colin.
Oh, wow.
And they're here to talk about Carl on the reward. Here we go.
Get Carl a... Get Carl a beer. Get Carl a... Carl was like, good gracious, nachos so tasty. These David stuff in their faces. Basketball challenge, time to shoot some threes. Carl waited for the right time to win some beers. Boat's leaving, pack the beers in. Carl's ready to chug before eating. Hands SmackDown, Best Survivor, Drunk Four Seasons, Throwback, Amazon, Rob, Sister Neenan. Cause Carl feels like busting loose and he feels like crushing Bruce.
One, done.
On reward, he need no excuse. So Davey, get this man a few. I said, we're getting drunk in here.
So drunk.
So go get Carl a beer.
Carl is getting so drunk, he's gonna get voted off.
Who needs salad wraps when you be popping the bottles? Survivor Godfather, you may know him as Carl. Now he's on BF4 and he's starting to wobble, but Carl could win a balance challenge even wearing beer goggles. Warm, sweating, get Carl a cold one. Tell in Kara, vote for Allison. The plan is solid, he knows that he can't lose. My man Carl nullifies those brews. So run this game like Don Carleone, but watch out for Gabby because she's gonna send him home. Checking votes and he's betrayed by his best friends like Carl the Trap has spoken. Bing! We're getting drunk in here.
So drunk.
So go get Carl a beer.
Carl is getting so drunk, he's gonna get voted off.
That was another great hit from the artist Nelly Wigglesworth, aka Nelly Adenis. And finally, Josh Wiggler.
Yes.
To round out the top five Wandoff songs in the country on a week of all-star Wandoff artists in the top five, here comes Alex G. And Alex G has a long-distance dedication for his favorite player of the season, and her name is Gabby. He has an anthem for her after this week's big move. Here's Alex G.
I think part of my charm is that I'm kind of nerdy and kind of quirky, and that can be disarming to people.
Thought I'd vote with Alex.
Gabby, will you date me?
But he wasn't a match.
Huh?
Plant some votes out with Carl.
Dang.
Now I blindside in bed.
Dang.
Even though Dan had Kara. Nola Byer, I'm so thankful. Wish I could say thank you to Slamtown. Cause he was an angel. One made me scheme. One intimidates me. And one made me cry. Eat breadsticks with no hands. Drink straight from the bottle. Breadsticks still in my mouth. And Carl left me out. Told them not to tell me. Yeah, for that I say thank you. Next,
next.
This game's complex,
plex.
Play out who's next. I'm so grateful the Goliaths are a mess. Thank you. Next,
next.
You'll be perplexed,
plex.
When you're next. I'm so grateful now the Godfather's gone.
Kiss the ring.
I ain't worried about nothing.
Head off to the beach.
Plus I met some Goliaths. Better strategic discussions. I know they say I make moves too fast, but this one gon' last. Cause her name is Allison. Nick and Davey, who's that? Her, Care, and Mike. Plus me and Christian. We played in the sand. We blurred tribal lines. The Davids find idols, but that's not what I need. Cause look what I found. Gab's Goozy Gang. Our next move's bigger than Slamtown's pecs. Even if he flexed,
flex.
Christian's next. I'm so grateful the Davids are now a mess. You'll be perplexed,
plex.
When you're next,
next.
Mad respect. David versus Goliath is the best season of all time. Don't at me.
Russell.
That was a hit single for Ariana Grande, 39.
Yes,
and
yes,
we're wishing
yes.
her the best after her recent breakup with Pete David versus Goliathson. With that big Goliath energy.
You know, I had never heard Thank You Next. This is my first exposure to it. It just hadn't happened for me yet, and now it has in an unexpected way. Although I probably should have anticipated that this is
and
how
you
I would hear
still thinking. Haven't heard it.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to. I think this is how I prefer to live my life. Yeah, that's it.
From what I hear, the superior version.
Yes. Thank you, next, next. It's thank you, next, next, I think is how it would
be. And sadly, we don't have a next wand off to play. Just a top five here this week. Of course, you can vote all week long when you go to robhasawebsite.com
/VoteWanda to cast your vote in the weekly WandaOff competition. As Josh Wiggler mentioned earlier on, the top two vote getters this week will earn a spot in this season's final WandaOff.
Which almost doesn't really matter. Very much almost doesn't really matter.
I mean, it was a good week for that twist. This is... The tabulator, Kurt Clark, is going to put all of the votes together, throw out all of the erroneous votes from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and announce this week's winner once again. Special thanks to Randy Neupel, who is one of the greatest human beings alive, who screens all of the WandaOffs and helps keep Casey Kasem barely sane.
I like the idea of Randy Neupel as like a top five human being. I think that I'm here for that.
Just tell me where Kurt Clark has the poll and I'll be there to vote. Also, special thanks to Jason Curtis Rivera, who's making the WandaOff music videos all season long. And with that, Josh Wiggler, very nice to talk to you again here in this double loaded episode, like those nachos of Survivor. All right, Casey Kasem, everybody. Wow.
Thanks, Casey. Oh, my God.
In thank you. Next.
That spirit is in better spirits this week, it seems.
Yes. 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 Very good. Yeah. Everything seems to be a quieter week for Casey.
Oh, my God. Okay. Can you get through all of the remaining business that you have to get through in this part? I have to eat the latkes. Actually latkes on the other side of this door. Okay.
I can wrap it up in 60 seconds. Okay.
All right. Let's do it. 60 seconds.
Coming up, of course, News AF will be back in regular time slot with the live know-it-alls. We've got Tyson Apostle on the recap. Yes. This week, Bryce Isaiah is going to be here for the feedback show. Very excited about that. We've got some bonus coverage even coming this weekend. Of course, if you want to listen to the full 40 plus songs that were submitted for this week's WandaOff, go to robiswebsite.com/patron. Of course, also we have our 2500th episode of Rob is a Podcast also up on the website and the podcast feed as well, where I sat down for an interview with the first lady of podcasting, Josh Wiggler. Enjoy your latkes. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
It's that time again. No, not for more Aaron Robertson songs. Time to get on your feet and dance. Who could give you pleasure? Found some hidden treasure. Blindside of Goliath King. Who took the mayor's jacket? He made such a racket. In the challenge, he was distracting.
It was Davey.
Shouting numbers at the nerd.
It was Davey.
Apocalyptophilic blurred.
It was Davey.
A late addition to the game.
It was Davey.
Devilish is his middle name. Next, we go into the mind of Dan Ringring.
Dumb Dan.
He sulks alone in the sand. He thinks,
Dumb Dan.
Just lost his right-hand man. He just
stays there.
Thinking about how he played his idol for Angelina. He's thinking to himself,
why did he play?
Is that all for someone he doesn't even like?
Why did he play it?
Yeah, if he would have known and could do it again, he would play it for him again. And now, with John and Dan out of the game, that leaves Christian Kubicki as the ultimate
bro chacho chacho man.
He is the last
bro chacho man. Chacho chacho man.
King of the bro chachos.
Bro chacho 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 chacho.